First of all, didn't experience any love. My mother never kissed me. Father was very rigorous, never home. And only grandmother. I experienced some love from my grandmother, that's true. But till only was 6 years old, and then I went away. And that lack of love made me a very sad child. But at the same time, I'm not worried about this. I think everything happened for a reason. Actually made me a strong child. And, you know, after that, I decided not to have my children, but I have so many children. I have millions of my students who all over the world, which I'm very proud of, their achievement, and my own institute. All of them become my people I love, and I create my own family, which is not my own real family.
Sagt Marina Abramović, die ich für den Podcast Lange Ohren getroffen habe, um mit ihr über Liebe, Leben und Tod, künstlerische Grenzerfahrungen zu sprechen und natürlich über die große Retrospektive in der Albertina, die eine Zeitreise durch ihr außergewöhnliches, gefeiertes Oeuvre ist. Marina Abramović gilt als Begründerin der modernen Performance und hat mit ihren legendären Auftritten Kunstgeschichte geschrieben. Sie hat ihren Körper auf radikale Weise eingesetzt, Schmerzgrenzen ausgelotet und ihr Publikum herausgefordert, immer auf der Suche nach Erkenntnis und Transformation. Sie marschierte 2500 Kilometer auf der chinesischen Mauer entlang, saß wochenlang in einem Museum, ohne sich zu bewegen und lieferte sich den Gewaltfantasien fremder Menschen aus. Ich bin Clarissa Stadler, Journalistin und Autorin und möchte wissen, was Marina Abramović antreibt. Unser Gespräch findet für diesen Podcast ausnahmsweise auf Englisch statt. And I now say, welcome, Marina Abramović. So good to have you today.
I'm happy to be here.
Before we dive into the 5 decades of art history you wrote and that can be seen in the Albertina at the moment, I would like to know about your most recent work, a show you did in Manchester, and that has the title Balkan Erotic Epic. This sounds interesting. What it is all about?
I think this piece took me about 25 years. I've been thinking about, and I make a small version of that work as 12 minutes full film in 2005. And from that period, I was thinking how I can make a much larger version. And now I had the opportunity, Manchester Festival, which actually I have the 120 people working with me, which is the largest cast I ever had in my life. But this is the most demanding and most biographical piece I ever made in my life, because there are some of the character of this piece, it would play a very important role, was my mother. And I actually went to study Slavic culture, especially paganism, and communism, where I come from. So that two things mix in a very strange way together. I study Albania, Bulgaria, Romania, Montenegro, Slovenia, Serbia, part of Turkey, Greece, with all these rituals, they're using vaginas and using phalluses in order to actually connect to the gods and to the big questions in the universe, where we come from, who are we, and so on and so on. And these rituals, you know, the oldest one is 4th century, 10th century, 11th century, 15th. So I didn't actually invent anything new. I only took these rituals as they are and, you know, and redo them in our modern time to actually give possibility to how to see the human body in different way, which we always see anything with nudity as immediately pornography. And I just want to show the transcendental and human side of that.
It seems as if you redefined erotic in this program. What is the difference or even the connection between religion and erotic?
You know, erotic is always everywhere. The one thing is so important that sexual energy is the only energy we have in our body. And the way how we actually manifest this energy is a different story. We can manifest into religious concept. We can manifest into tenderness, love, spirituality, and transcendent this all, you know, think of erotic. But we also can have violence, we can have destruction, we can have killing, we can have really aggression. So that's the same energy we're using. So it's really interesting to actually address this energy and to see what we, how we can present in modern time today. Because today everything is politically, there is a political correctness about everything, not in just your country, but everywhere. So there's certain things we can show, even the art from the 70s, we could never actually show it today because it will be impossible. In the museums will have all these laws that is not, you know, they will be forbidden. So this is, for me, was really important to push these borders and have the freedom of an artist to show that. And I was expecting there would be enormous negativity and criticism. And I was already ready to make an entire book based on actually negative critics. But actually, till now, we didn't have any. It was incredibly well received. So people need something. They need to think profoundly about their own, you know, past and their own nature and their own body.
So it only seems that you opened a new chapter of your creative life doing this operatic work. But in fact, you staged an opera 5 years ago. That was The Seven Deaths of Maria Callas, where you were dying on stage. Have you always been inspired by opera and theater? Since when? And is it maybe the development from coping with death and pain towards life and stage?
Not any of this. First of all, I hated opera and I hated theater passionately when I started doing performances, because there will be enemy of performance. Performance is real. Everything is real. In opera and the theater, you know, you have to rehearse. You have to, you know, stand on exact spotlights. There is a text. There is a, you know, the repetition of the same evening to doing the same stuff. Everything which actually the real performance is not. Blood is not the blood. Knife is not the knife. All wrong thing. And an opera was boring to me. So it took me a long time to develop long durational performance art and become very secure in my medium. So then I was ready to explore other stuff. You know, something like opera, which is like the most old-fashioned form of art, I was interested in how I can make something different and new, how I can make new form, you know, and actually I did, because nobody ever actually had the idea to only show deaths in opera. And in one evening, I show not only one opera, I show seven, and seven times dying. And, you know, a normal opera is 5 hours. My opera was only 1 hour and 36 minutes because dying is much shorter. And then also this attracts much more young audience. So the young audience start coming to opera they normally don't do. And that really changed the entire, revolutionized, you know, the box office of the tickets. The people, when I perform, they have to add more days because everything was sold out. And then after that, every opera house was asking me if I could do another opera. I was not interested. I'd done one. That's enough. The thing to do with the theater, I start actually with my own biography. And later on, I made the biography with Bob Wilson, Life and Death of Marina Abramović. And, you know, I learned lots from Willem Dafoe, the actor, but also of the Bob Wilson. And then I got interested in theater. But what I done is not even theater. What I done here with Balkan Erotic Epic is literally a new form of art, which I merge everything. I merge something that never been merged before. And this is long durational performance art and dancers. They've never been actually put together. It's the first time. And it's 4 hours and it's 13 scenes, actually completely independently, all in the same space. I felt like I give 13 children birth. That was such enormous demanding work and actually worked. And this is something how that merged between long durational and dancer. Dancer is always about rhythm and timing and you know, and long duration is about nothing. It's about doing something forever and repetition. And rituals have the also in context repetition. So I merge all these elements together. I put elements of the animation. I put the brass music together with electronic. Everything which actually was never done before. And also, I done some really strong daring scenes. There's a scene of women show vagina, and I got criticism now with Guardian, New York Times, Financial Times. They say to me, "You're showing vagina like a weapon." So I was so proud of that, because you know it's not something that we are dealing with pornography. We're dealing with incredible, powerful thing. What means vagina, where the wars come from. You know, you see the most famous Manet painting, The Origin of the World, is a woman vagina. So, you know, something that we have to connect to our past and see things differently. So it's a new form of art right now. And I'm very proud of it.
2 years ago, you nearly died. You fell into two comas. It was a very serious illness. What was it like to recover from that dramatic moment and be back in life?
You know, it was the lung embolism, and it was really bad. And I was thinking, you know, I will die. But I didn't. And they say that 80% people die from this, you know. So I would kind of feel like life was given to me as a present, as a miracle. And I'm enjoying every minute of it. I just replaced 5 months ago my knee. And, you know, it's perfect. I'm walking, I'm doing work, and I'm like literally, you know, traveling around the world with new ideas.
And you look fabulous, so I must say that.
And I really feel life, and I feel happy, and I feel that in my work, like in Bach and Rotting Happy, I add humor. And normally my work looks so tragic, but there's so much humor now. And that really lifts up my spirit, and I'm really happy.
I would like to also to talk about your early performances back in the days of the 1970s. Can you remember the moment when you stopped painting and doing traditional things and for the first time discovered your body as a medium? Can you describe this crucial moment? What happened?
First of all, I was lying in the park in Belgrade, looking to the sky, and just because I was painting clouds. And there was no any clouds, it was just blue sky. It came this very fast, the military aeroplanes, and make this beautiful drawing in the sky. And I would look at this drawing. I said, this is ridiculous. Why have to go to studio to make something two-dimensional when I can just, you know, take the planes to make drawings, or use the fire, or use the water, or use the earth, or use my own body? So I went to the military base and asked if they give me 12 military planes to make the drawing. They called my father, who was, you know, general of the army, and said, your daughter is absolutely out of her mind. You know how much cost 12 planes for her to do some, you know, things, it's no way, so they send me home. And I could not do that. But then I start working with sound. And sound was really interesting for me for a while. And then from the sound, I get into the body. And I remember I was always very, very intimidated and incredibly conscious about myself, and I'm very shy. And I remember the moment I stood in the front of the audience, that everything, all this disappeared. And I was presenting the concept, and not me, poor Marina, with whatever body and complex I had. And this was incredibly powerful. I knew this was my media immediately. And it was very lucky at such an early age that I find what I wanted to do, because so many artists spend lots of time in you know, researching what they wanted to do. I was really lucky. And then, as you see now, 6 years later, I'm still doing it.
You mentioned before that some of your videos today are shocking people because we live in different times now. But also for me, some of your early performances seem shocking when you hurt yourself, stab yourself with blood and sweat. It's hard to see that you're cutting knives into your body. When I visited the exhibition in Albertina, a young girl was standing next to me. Watching the video where you are flagellating yourself with the whip and screaming, how would you explain to young people today what you did then in former times?
You know, first of all, young people should look into ancient rituals. They should look into ancient cultures. They should see what it means, you know, the kind of dealing with pain in general, you have to have much larger image of that, not just focusing on that acne flagellation. You have to see the cause of this and what it means. I went to every other culture to study this. I went to Aborigines, Central Australia. I went everywhere, you know, to understand what body means. Because human body is afraid of three things: suffering, pain, and mortality. So this is all about, when you really open the door of pain, you understand that you can control pain. And you understand all this, you know, higher meaning of that. As a child, you can't do that. You're too young. You maybe get shocked. But later on, if this image stays in your mind for longer and you start really opening yourself to other kind of cultures, then you understand the work. And I have my work, but it's kind of, in a strange way, it's so much more accepted, not by young, but my old generation, my generation, just by younger people. I have the kids of 14 years old, so many of them come, 14, and say, "You changed my life." How I can change his life? He's 14. But something happened that really triggered thinking, you know. They really think. I even now invent my own avatar, which is 60 years old, which I'm launching, you know, in next month. And it's really important to actually how to connect with the young people is through the media, which is technology, because they're born with the computers and is with the video games. So if I can make my own avatar and they start looking my work in a museum and they start looking website, and this avatar will learn them not to speed up, but to learn them to slow down, to learn them to understand that they should detox of technology. And, you know, I use the media in order to give them a different message.
You very often said that as a child you didn't experience much love. Why was that? And later on, how did you manage to develop self-love?
First of all, I didn't experience any love. My mother never kissed me. Father was very rigorous, never home. And only grandmother. I experienced some love from my grandmother, that's true. But till only was 6 years old, and then I went away. And that lack of love made me a very sad child. But at the same time, I'm not worried about this. I think everything happened for a reason. Actually made me a strong child. And, you know, after that, I decided not to have my children, but I have so many children. I have millions of my students who all over the world, which I'm very proud of, their achievement, and my own institute. All of them become my people I love, and I create my own family, which is not my own real family.
For the most of your performances and actions, it takes mental superpowers. Like for the artist is present in the MoMA in New York in 2010. By the way, I was there and saw it. I mean, I didn't sit opposite to you, but I saw the performance. So that was really a very famous performance you did. And I think it really changed your career, one could say, because so many people came, so many people could understand what's your work all about. You sit there still for 8 to 10 hours a day for weeks without moving. I mean, I'm sitting here for 15 minutes and my back is aching. So how could you sit there for like 8 or 10 hours without moving? Do you train this willpower?
First of all, you can't become an artist. You're an artist or you're not. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how good you are. But you have to have in you, it's kind of DNA. And then you also have to be made to do performance and not something else. You know, when a student come to me and say to me, "I want to do performance," I ask him just to stand, you know, in the front of 20 or 30 people and do absolutely nothing, just to stand. You right away, you know, if you can do this or not. Because charisma is something you can't learn. You have to have it. You have to be born with this. It's really the way how he stands, how he occupies the space, how he connects with the people in the front of him. It's everything, you know. And I, you know, when you're young, you always need so much material. You need to have projections as objects and this and that in music because you're so insecure. But actually, the older I get, I understand that I don't need nothing. You're just, you need yourself and the people. His energy is there. And energy is something with performance invisible, but it's highly emotional. I mean, one of my achievements that I'm really proud last year was Glastonbury concert. It's 250,000 people. And
you did an amazing thing there. Maybe we can talk about that. you stood on the stage and you asked the people there to stay silent for 7 minutes at a festival that everybody knows for music and noise. So it's incredible.
And then also to put their hands on the strangers, just in one hand, on the shoulder, on the other, everybody, you know, standing next to each other, and just give this unconditional love, because I really believe in the energy of love that can change something. The only way to change, you know, world is to change ourselves, because we always criticize, so easy, you know, and to put the spirit human down. You always criticize that government is not right, or my neighbor, you know, make me hell or whatever. But we never look at ourselves, what we can do, what you can do, what I can do. That's something that can change something. To me, I was so afraid that I could not do it. It was Palestinian flags. It was Jewish flags. It was so ready for demonstrations for laws. But, you know, the first 30 seconds, I knew I could do it when I stood there, because I learned this for 60 years, how to deal with human energy. You can't just go there if you're 20. I could not even dare to do it. The artist is present. I made when I was 65 years old. I could not do earlier, not because I was not stronger. I was stronger, younger, but I didn't have determination, willpower, concentration to do this earlier. And this one is now with 70, whatever, 8, I made it last year. So then I know how to do this. And that's something that you have to train and be incredibly disciplined about your life. I need to sleep at least 8 hours every single day. I never drink in my life. I'm probably in Austria the only artist that you ever heard that never drink, literally never. But you have to have discipline about yourself to create and keep the energy that you have to do. Yes, I'm overworked, but when I come now and talk to you, I'm here. I'm nowhere else. I'm talking just to you, and I'm here and now.
Talking about Austria, in 1975, the Austrian gallerist Ursula Krinzinger invited you to Vienna. That was the time when Wiener Aktionismus, Austrian Actionism, was a much discussed genre. Did these artists inspire you? Did you meet them? Did they influence you?
Interesting to look things. I'm not inspired by other artists. I never was, because I think the artist always inspired by something. So you look like you're inspired by secondhand all the time. You know, I'm always inspired by ancient cultures and nature. That's always been my inspiration. But I was really aware of this, and I was invited in 1975, after I made my performance in Innsbruck, I was invited from Hermann Nietzsche to go to Prinzendorf and make performance, which he invited many young artists to participate in this work. And I supposed to be there 24 hours in Prinzendorf. And I went there and I stayed 24 hours, but I only performed for 12 because it was not my thing. I actually didn't like it at all. I had to be on the cross for, I don't know, the hours with the full intestines and hearts of the sheep. It was fine. I understand his concept and what he want. It was absolutely not to do with me. So I stopped, but I stayed there to see the end.
It's funny that you mentioned this, because it is exactly what I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned this in your book, Walk Through Walls, a very good book to read, by the way. And you said, Nietzsche, it's not my cup of tea. It's not for me. It's not because it's too exhausting, because obviously you could do everything you wanted. Was it too religious? Was it too extreme? Was it because of the animals?
No, we come from different background. You know, I come from another background. My story is a different story. We have two different biographies. But, you know, talking about the entire group of these people, to me, the Ginter Bruce was the most interesting from all of them. That was kind of closer to me, if I think about. Of course, later on, in Seven Easy Pieces, I also repeat one of Ali Expert performance, The Genital Panic.
Are you reading my mind? Because that was my next question. I wanted to talk about Wally Expert, because you met her and you reenacted, so to say, Aktionshose Genitalpanik in the United States, if I'm well informed.
Yes.
Yes.
I chose this piece because, I actually reenact this piece from reasons that the public really took performances as granted, and then the copy in all kinds of media, in a fashion, in MTV, in the just everywhere without giving any rights to actually original work. So I wanted to kind of settle this for real. I wanted to ask artists for permission. I can perform this. I wanted to have documentation, real material to show next to my version and to do this work. And she gave me permission and I was really happy to do it. But it was so many funny stories around this piece. And I tell you one.
Yes.
So I performed seven works, 7 days, each day another one. And I always give to the what I bring to the new, as a new part of the work, is time. Even if the performance was 30 minutes or 1 hour, I perform all of them equally 7 hours, you know, because I put the long duration into this. So I performed Janet Epaulin 7 hours in the Guggenheim Museum. And there was the exhibition at that time in the rest of the museum, because I was in the atrium. It was the exhibition of the Russian icons. So it was Sunday, and all the Russian, you know, the immigrants and everybody was coming with the children to see Russian icons. And they called police, because I was with machine gun with open vagina in the middle. But they didn't actually care about my vagina or machine gun. What they was caring about, that I didn't was aware of that, that my machine gun was pointed to one of the icons. So this was what I was worrying about. But anyway, nothing happened.
That's a wonderful story, Marina, really.
You know, Valley Export is so, if I think about, you know, her position in the Actionismus, mm-hmm. it was so difficult. I could just imagine how much difficulty she had time as a female artist to be with this incredible tough group of macho guys. So I really have full respect that she done what she done and she survived.
Many female artists of your generation, like Vali or you yourself, had a very late career or were suppressed by male artists. But it seems that you were strong enough to do your own career. Is it better for female artists to do their own thing than to be part of networks?
That's why I'm not feminist. And that's why I want to be part of anything. I just want to be my own thing. You know, I'm the first artist in 265 years to have a show as a female artist in
the Royal Academy.
Mm-hmm. I'm the first artist now in Venice, in Academia Arte, to have the as a female artist the show, not just in contemporary, but also in the old section of the art. So look like I feel like a bulldozer or some kind of truck. I always go first, you know, to break this old rules that the female artists could have time. I mean, Louise Bourgeois started only making a career when she was 60. Husband was dead, children went to school. I mean, it was really tough. Women was always secretaries of the great artists, and they're doing work, but they never could actually show. I mean, I remember Mario Merz had a studio with Marisa Merz next to each other. And when they come to the collectors to see his work, he makes sure they don't ever pass her studio. I mean, she's a great artist. Now, after he's dead, she made some really wonderful work. But that's a very hardcore, you know, to really create your own space. I don't care. I really don't. I just feel that art doesn't have gender. We have to do what we can do.
In the last part of our talk, I would like to speak about spirituality. Over decades, you researched and experienced energy that comes from crystal, quartz, stones, even the desert. What exactly happens when we touch crystals or we sit under a tree when we get in touch with nature?
That's a beautiful question. I like it. But nobody asked me this question before. And I'm very, very happy that you didn't ask people the rhythm zero. I can't talk about the rhythm zero anymore because always this question comes first. You know, if you think about science right now, crystals are used, I mean, the quartz is used in our watches and used everywhere. But also just to connect to the different, you know, civilizations, if they live somewhere in the universe, they just made a little chip out of crystal, which is small that you can put just on your hand, and entire knowledge of our humanity is on that chip, and they send in the capsule, you know, to go with one of these rockets. So crystal have this incredible possibility to condense knowledge and to actually embody light and energy. And they are a very powerful thing. And if you connect with vibration of crystal, you actually can access to that. And they also have healing power. And they've been used for centuries. And we, you know, we have to rediscover, but really have connection. So I made this called transitory objects. I don't make them, I don't call them actually sculptures. I call them transitory objects, but they're absolutely interactive. You have to, you know, spend time with them, and then you can have this access to that kind of energy. And then I've had a very big show now in Shanghai called Transforming Energy. And they're absolutely interactive, and everybody is actually have to use them. But also, you know, when you say use them, it depends how much invest time in this. I remember there was one, the two of these crystal objects, and it was American, two guys, and they stand, they're sitting on them. And the one said to him, I'm already 5 minutes here. Do you feel anything? He said, not at all. Let's go for hamburger. Of course, he will never feel anything. All about is spending time. And this is why, to me, we come to the, you know, end of this conversation talking, why long durational performance is important. Because in long durational performance, you actually have to invest all your energy and time and become like life itself. And, you know, you become vulnerable because you can't act, you can't perform. You just start showing your true self. And this kind of vulnerability connect with the public. So they can feel, you can feel, and this connection become very emotional.
That's so interesting what you're saying. But I'm still wondering what happens if we stop getting in touch with nature, like stones, trees, forests, etc., and start fusing our brains and bodies to electronic devices, like mobiles and computers. Aren't we losing the energy of nature?
You know, but this is not when happen. It's happening. Mm. It's happening right now. I asked one kid, you know, what did he like nature? And he answered me, my television is my nature. My computer is my nature. Mm. It's happening. We are losing this. And nature is, you learn from nature. Everything is a huge source of energy. You know, just being on the top of the mountains, looking to exploding volcanoes, looking to sky with the line and sea, you know, kind of meet. This is where you really get energy. And if you do lose contact, we lose ourselves, we lose humanity. And artificial intelligence and all what's going on is, you know, every single book from 70s science fiction is reality today. Mm. And every new book we make is going to be reality for the future. And that's what we are living now. And it's irreversible. Because, you know, we are living 8 billion people on the planet. Before it was 3-4. The planet actually have too much. They have to check us off, you know, to put some kind of content. I mean, when it was COVID, we could see that we can help less pollution of the planet. But then COVID finished and we done
all the same. It was not sustainable, yes.
Same shit as always, mm-hmm. You know. Human only can change with tragedy.
At the end, I'd like to ask you about something very personal. This major retrospective in the Albertina spans 5 decades of your exceptional work. You had so many different periods in your work. Looking back on your career, what was the most important moment for you in your life as an artist so far, because you are still working?
To leave Belgrade, to leave and just understand that the entire planet is a studio. That was so important. That decision make everything change, because it was too small. And this is my advice to all young artists. You have to leave your hometown. You have to go far away to understand this planet where you live in, and then you can come back. But you have to have a bigger picture. We live too much in small pictures.
What a wonderful talk. Thank you so much, Marina.
Thank you.